Galen White joins us on Sports Byline. He's written the book, Singles and Smiles, How Artie Wilson Broke Baseball's Color Barrier. And Wilson was a colorful character of baseball with a bright personality and a game to match. And he was the last professional ballplayer to hit 400, batting 402 for the Negro League's Birmingham Barons back in 1948. And this is the story of one of the lesser-known Negro League Pacific Coast League players who was pushing the racial boundaries at the same time Jackie Robinson was in the 1940s. And in fact, Branch Rickey was considering Wilson over Robinson for integration. But paraphrasing from the book, Wilson was the better shortstop, but for integrating baseball, Robinson was the better man. Galen, let me ask you, why was Wilson, and has he been the forgotten man in baseball history?
Yes, he has. Been overlooked time and again, actually, not only in going to the major leagues or being the choice of Branch Rickey, but then later on, he was passed over when some of the others were picked following Jackie. He got caught up in a couple squabbles, one between the Yankees and the Indians, Bill Veeck, in 49, and that held back his career. And then, of course, in 51, when he finally made the majors, he was caught in the middle between Leo DeRozier, his manager with the Giants, and Charlie Dressen, manager of the Dodgers, who had managed him in Oakland. Then if you fast forward to Ken Burns' excellent documentary on the Negro Leagues, Artie was totally overlooked in that documentary, and it should have been included in some way or at least interviewed. He was living at that time. But Artie was a five-time Negro League All-Star. He has the third highest batting average in Negro League history, 376, and as you mentioned, the last player at a major league level to hit 400.
What was it about his upbringing that molded his personality and his character?
Well, he met his father only once, and he didn't know it was father until somebody told him that it was. At that time, he was already playing baseball, Negro League baseball. He had a close relationship with his mother, and then he had a mentor, a man who kind of took him under his wings. He was a Sunday school teacher in Birmingham, Alabama, and he became a role model and also encouraged him in sports. And so he had this very strong moral compass, you might say, that guided him through life. And I went to church with Artie in 1975, the first time I met him. He had invited me to attend Sunday school. I took a pass on that, but I showed up at church. And the theme of that day was A Day to Remember. And Artie got up and gave his testimony. And, of course, he mentioned his baseball career, but said the day that he remembered most was the day that he converted and gave his life to the Lord. So he was 12 years old at that time, and he was a deeply religious man, a very loving man, a very caring man, and he never lost that moral compass.
And where does his talents come from? I mean, was it just a natural talent? I know he grew up in the segregated Birmingham area, but where did that talent come from?
Well, I don't go into much in the book, but he was also an excellent football player, played quarterback. Of course, at 5'10" and 162 pounds, which was his weight in baseball, you're not going to last too long playing quarterback in football. But he gravitated towards baseball because that's what he loved, and he made his own balls, he made his own bats, he saved money for his glove. He just had this passion for baseball, and then he had people. There was a lot of talent, a lot of great players in the Birmingham area. In fact, he was close friends with Willie Mays' father, Cat Mays, and also, of course, he was Willie's teammate on the 48 Black Barons. But a story that's not well known is that Artie wanted to take Willie to Oakland after the 49 season. In fact, Cat Mays wanted him to go as well. And so they were going to try to get around the baseball rules at that time where Willie had to have graduated from high school. But you can get around that by if Artie was his legal guardian, then Willie could have gone out there with Oakland and played for the Oakland Oaks in 1950. The Oaks chose not to do that, and as a result, then the Giants signed Willie. But had Artie and I talked about that, and I asked him, I said, what if Willie had gone with you to Oakland there in 1950? What do you think would have happened? And his answer was the Yankees probably would have got him because the Oaks at that time, most of their players, Jackie Jensen, Billy Martin in 1949, both moved up to the Yankees.
Also, I know he had a work accident, was very young in his career. How did that happen?
Yes, he was working at the American Cast Iron Pipe Company, known as IPSIPCO. worked in the machine shop and cut off the, in an accident, cut off the top part of his right thumb. That's his throwing hand. He started carrying a rubber ball around and strengthening the hand. Piper Davis said who was a teammate and an excellent ball player himself, said he adjusted his throw from throwing it straight overhand to three quarters, and he adjusted his grip on the bat. The only year he didn't hit over 400 in the Birmingham Industrial League was the year after that accident, but his career batting average over 7 years in that league was well over 400.
I know when he played on the West Coast here in the PCL, he was really a great player. I've heard those stories about him. But how did he end up out here, and how did he end up in the PCL?
Well, I mentioned earlier the squabble between Bill Veeck of the Indians and George Weiss of the New York Yankees. The Yankees claimed they had a verbal commitment from Artie to sign with them. They did not, but they claimed they did have. And they had a telegram also from Tom Hayes, the Black Barons owner. Veeck went to Puerto Rico, found Artie, signed him and Luke Easter. And as a result of that, he went to spring training with the Indians in 49. He hit 417 in spring training. And then, of course, this was still being argued with the baseball commissioner, Happy Chandler. He started the 1949 season with the San Diego Padres, which were an Indian farm club. Luke Easter was with that team as well. And then in May, mid-May, about 6 weeks into the season, Chandler awarded Artie to the Yankees. Now, the Yankees had already made up their mind if they got Artie, they weren't going to keep him. So they did a deal with the Oakland Oaks to send Artie to Oakland. And, of course, he went there, won the batting title, hit 349, led the league in stolen bases.
I would also assume, being on the West Coast, because I know in talking to Joe Morgan, he was saying how difficult it was for him to go back and start his career playing minor league baseball in the Deep South and the problems that he encountered. But when he went from the opposite direction, Birmingham, Alabama, to the West Coast, what did he find?
Well, of course, he was the first Black to play for the Oakland Oaks, and then later on he was the first Black to play for the Seattle Rainiers. There was some resistance on the team. There was one ball player, Les Scarzella, who did not want to play with him, and the Oaks took care of that by sending Scarzella, who had been an all-star in the league. They demoted him to Class B, and he wound up quitting baseball. He was the only player that Artie mentioned. He said that there were a couple of others who had some problems, and the Oaks wound up getting rid of him. The Oaks had won the Coast League pennant in 1948. Casey Stengel was the manager, the 9-0 man, you may recall. And by 1949, they needed a little bit of a house cleaning, and Dressen had come in succeeding Stengel. And they brought in, they signed Jackie Jensen. And actually, the signing of Jackie Jensen took some of the heat off Artie, because there was so much attention to paid to Jackie, who had been All-America football player at University of California, that kind of took him out of the spotlight a little bit. As a result, Jackie and Artie became very good friends. And what a lot of people don't realize is that Billy Martin roomed with Artie.
Yeah. So, I want to ask you about the Billy Martin relationship in a second, but didn't he find that he could make more money, better working conditions, and a better family life on the West Coast?
Absolutely. And that is why when he was with the Giants in 51 and he was sitting on the bench, he went to Leo and asked to be sent back to Oakland, where he made more money and could play every day. And actually, he was more familiar with Willie Mays than the Giants themselves, because he'd played with him that 48 season and also had seen Willie play when he was younger because of his relationship with his father, Cat Mays. So Artie preferred the West Coast. When the Giants sent him down to 51, they sent him for a couple games up to Ottawa, then back to Minneapolis, where, you know, Willie, when he left Minneapolis, was hitting well over 400. A brief period of time that Artie was there, he hit close to 400. Then he wound up back in Oakland, and he spent basically the rest of his career in the Coast League. He did have a comeback. He was selling used cars in 1962, and the Portland Beavers needed some help because of so many injuries, and he, after not playing 4 years, wound up playing 19 games and not making an error.
I mentioned about Billy Martin. Tell me a little bit about that relationship.
Well, When Artie played in San Diego, his roommate was Luke Easter, and he got to Oakland, and there was nobody to room with him until Billy Martin stepped forward and said, I'll room with him. They had an incident in Portland, which I write about in the book, where they went into this one restaurant. Jackie Jensen was with him as well. And the waitress pretty much ignored them. They didn't get any service, and Billy was ready to start a fight over it. Artie told him, not now, Billy, and they left the place without any problems. But Billy was indignant over what happened to him there. That's the only incident where Billy was involved. There was another one later on in Oakland where they went to McClyman's High School, and they weren't going to allow Artie to sit on the stage. And then Charlie Dressen said, well, if he doesn't sit up in the stage with us, we all leave.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I also know, and I've talked about this with a number of people who have either written about it or had firsthand knowledge about the integration of baseball and Branch Rickey, but the quote from your book is, Wilson was the better shortstop, but for integrating baseball, Robinson was the better man. I want you to explain that statement to me, but when you think about what you've said about the personality of Galen White, and you think about that Jackie Robinson was a little bit, he had an edge to him. He wasn't going to take any guff or anything. That seems strange, that statement.
Well, Jackie Robinson, from the people I talked to, while he was a great competitor because he did have that edge and he did have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Artie really didn't. He played the game with a tremendous amount of zest and flair, but Artie wasn't mad at anybody. In fact, he was smiling most of the time, and if you weren't smiling, it was only a matter of time that he would have you smiling. Artie himself said that Jackie was the better choice. And he said he was the better choice because he'd had more contact with white people, because he'd gone to UCLA, because he had been out of the South more than Artie had, although Artie had traveled extensively out of the South. He'd played ball on the West Coast with the Satchel Paige All-Stars. He'd played on other All-Star teams that had traveled through California. So it wasn't that Artie had not had contact with white people, but not as much as Jackie. And that's why, in his mind, he thought Jackie was the best choice. In fact, we had a lengthy discussion over the players that were playing at the time we first talked in 75, who among those that followed could have done what Jackie had done. And Artie wasn't too sure that very many of them could have done what Jackie did.
We have about 2 minutes left, but where did Artie get his style? Nice clothes, snappy berets, and Cuban cigars.
Well, the Birmingham Black Barons as a team, they were a bunch of gentlemen. They were probably, particularly the 48 team, and very well-dressed. In fact, one of the players, Bill Greason, a pitcher, he went on to become a Baptist preacher. He's still living today. He's 93 years old. He was a snappy dresser, too. That was just Artie. Artie took good care of himself, and he was a gentleman. And not only, in fact, one of his nicknames was the Birmingham Gentleman. But he was a gentleman as well, and he just wanted to look good. And every time I ever saw Artie, he usually had a business suit on, and it was always a very snazzy one.
What do you think his legacy is?
Well, the smile and singles, and I think that's where the title of the book comes from, singles and smiles. You know, he only hit 13 home runs in his entire professional career. That includes Negro Leagues. He was known mostly for his singles. He was a left-handed hitter. Most of the singles went to left field. How he got them between some of the overshifted defenses, we'll probably never know. He did earn the nickname Houdini because of that. But he just had a great disposition. I think his legacy was that he was able to break through color barriers and be this go-between between white people and black people, and they both liked him. And my favorite story in the book is how he won over a fan in Sacramento who yelled for pitchers to hit him, who called him the N-word. And then 9 years later, when he ended his career in Sacramento, this fan was his biggest booster and was behind the organization for the Artie Wilson Appreciation Night. So when you can bring a man who was calling you the N-word all the way around to throwing a night in your honor, that is really moving a man from, you might say, 1 at the bottom to 10 at the top.
Boy, you said it very well. And, of course, I think that's a great example of how not only a good player he was, but a great person as well. Thank you very much, Galen. Take care.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
Galen White, again, talking about Artie Wilson. Check out the book. It's called Singles and Smiles, How Artie Wilson Broke Baseball's Color Barrier. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.